Fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Hey, darn right it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is a Monday, ready to set the tone for a whole nother week, man. Welcome aboard. So fun to have you with us here for the Voice of Reason. I am Andy Hoosier, broadcasting out of the heart of the nation in Wichita, Kansas, on our flagship radio station. We are all over the country, multiple radio stations and TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you watch or listen to the show. So great to have you. Your Millennial General reporting for duty like we do every single day. We have a loaded show for you. So much that happened over the weekend. And if you tuned in for our nationwide syndicated program over the weekend, then you heard a lot of the cool stuff. We actually got to go live to the Trump rally that brought in massive amounts of people on Saturday in New Jersey. So we'll get to that here in just a minute. There's some information regarding the Trump trials that are still going on. People losing their minds over that. And so much more. So we'll cover all that on the program today and more. Phil Kirpin will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. He is with American Commitment. We're going to talk about net neutrality and the latest vote from the FCC. If you are not aware that the federal government has re-implemented, the FCC voted to re-implement net neutrality that was originally put in place under the Biden administration. What does that actually mean? And how does your interweb surfing change from the implementation of net neutrality again? But first, we sat down just a couple hours ago. He was in studio with me and had to lay down an interview with him. A great friend and congressman for the 4th Congressional District right here in the state of Kansas. Getting the latest out of Washington, D.C., it's my very own Congressman Ron Estes right here on The Voice of Reason. Congressman Ron Estes, how are you, my friend?
Great. Thanks, Andy, for having me on.
Oh, it's always so good to chat with you. So much going on right now. Now that we're going into summertime, I know things are going to lighten up a little bit in Washington, D.C., but what a wild ride it's been passing all the tax bills, or the spending bills and the federal budget. We may have been 6 months into the fiscal year, but by golly, we made it happen this year, didn't we?
And finally, it was a little late. Very late in the year to get that process done. And, you know, unfortunately, Speaker Johnson's had his back against the wall from the day he was elected to get that done. And unfortunately, it didn't been enough spending. I mean, there's enough issues that people know that our deficit's out of control and we've got to do something about it. But we've got to focus on how do we get that spending curve spent. Bent back down.
Yeah, exactly. Now that the first step's essentially done for this year, you guys are working on next year, which we can get into later. Are you optimistic that now that we maybe kind of sort of have a structure going that we can start curbing some of that spending and get things under control now?
So I think this is, Speaker Johnson's going to lay out his game plan for this. I mean, this will be the first year that he's had the opportunity to do that. So he's got to work on that. Problem is, it's a broad avenue of things we've got to address. It's not just the things that we talk about on discretionary spending, but it's those automatic spending programs too. Yeah. And if we spent $0 on discretionary spending, we'd still have a deficit because of the amount of money being spent, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, both Medicare and Social Security we pay into, but we're not paying as much in while we're working as we're drawing out when we retire. And so we've got to fix the math. I mean, that's the problem. And food stamps and all the other programs that happen automatically, we've got to address.
Yeah, that mandatory spending is the big stickler there, and no one wants to touch it. And in fact, and we've talked about this before, that when we even try to talk about it, it goes from, hey, let's just slow the growth of it from a 4% growth to a 2% growth. And then we hear the other side argue that we're doing a 4% cut and how we're just letting people die in the streets. It's a wild conversation that we're not even allowed to have a serious conversation about reform on these things.
Yeah, it really is sad that so many people are looking for political posturing, talking about these problems instead of actually going out and addressing them. And we've got to have some adults in the room that actually focus on let's get these problems addressed so that, you know, America's always been a great country and we want to make sure it stays that way. And in order for us to be a leader in the world, we've got to address and make sure that our house is in order.
Yeah, amen to that. Well, first, by the way, as well, congratulations on being the chair for the new tax team with the Ways and Means Committee in Washington, D.C. So now my next question is, when can we abolish the IRS?
We've got some work to do still in that regards. You know, it's kind of just recently we saw the economy starting to slow down to 1.6% growth in the first quarter. That's right after inflation numbers came out that were hotter than expected for the last 3 months.
Sure.
And so we're seeing the full effect of Bidenomics, even though President Biden claims he's doing a good job in that regards. And the American people know that or not. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago where we had a booming economy. We had people's wages growing instead of declining because of inflation. And it was after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And, you know, instead of paying $1,000 more a month that people are having to do now with inflation, people are actually getting more in their paycheck to take home with them. And so some of those provisions are starting to expire. We've got to address those. I'm the chairman of the innovation tax team. So we're focusing on all the things that America has made great over the years. You know, the research and development to come up with new ideas. And, you know, Americans have invented everything from the air conditioner to the zipper. And we really are an innovative people. And we want to encourage that because that leads to economic growth, not just for the folks doing the inventing, but then also the people that make them and make the products and actually get the benefit of using them.
Yeah. Amen to that. During the latest press conference from the White House, they had mentioned that the tax cuts from Trump are expiring, and they like to walk that line to where they're going to allow them to expire, but they're not going to allow tax increases on the American people. Not quite sure how that one works. So trying to keep some of this stuff in place, and then, like you said, trying to create innovation, allow people to keep the money in their pockets, allow them to start a small business, expand their small business. That's why we see the vast majority of revenue coming into the country when we can grow the GDP.
Yeah, and it's another case where President Biden's not being honest in terms of what he says. I mean, he's bragged for years that he wasn't going to increase taxes on people making less than $400,000. But the net effect of is he allows these individual tax rates to increase, which he said he's going to.
Yeah.
In fact, he's tweeted out of the White House that he's going to. And that's going to be a tax increase on every American, regardless of what you make, and particularly more burdensome on the folks that are making less than $400,000 because they stood to get a bigger percentage cuts out of the tax reductions that came out of the Trump tax cuts.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? At the same time, there's so many other taxes that we could look at with taxes on raw materials or the death tax, for example, or, you know, the secondhand taxes. If you buy something that's used already, I mean, we've already seen some things recycled through a tax system, you know, two or three or four times. And after a while, I mean, the value of something really gets diminished when we see some of this. Are those opportunities that we could start seeing some reforms on?
There really are some things, although we're in the political posturing now. I mean, the House has passed in a bipartisan fashion to renew some of these Trump tax cuts provisions that have expired. Research and development and interest deductibility and depreciation of new capital, new plant and equipment purchases, as well as a child tax credit. And the Senate, the Democrats in the Senate aren't doing anything about it. They're sitting on it, and they haven't brought it up for a vote on the Senate. If they just do that, they'd actually be some positive signs that we'd see to help with growth in the economy.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? We're talking with Congressman Ron Estes from right here in the 4th Congressional District of Kansas. My congressman, great friend. We've known each other for a very long time. Let's talk about going into election season because things are going to slow down, I think, in D.C. quite a bit. And now, essentially, everything done from this point on is going to be some form of political posturing for most politicians up there on what they want to work on. Immigration, obviously, being one of those major fronts, isn't it? I mean, do you really see that we're going to see an immigration bill come out of substance before election time, or is it going to be a campaign issue, do you think?
So we've gotten into this problem now. I mean, President Biden's broken so many things, but one of the biggest things he's broken is border security in the country. And you know, American people now, you know, last polling we saw was 28% of the American people say that our border security is their top priority, and 68% of the people say that President Biden's doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Because what President Biden did when he came into office is he basically said, I know the law allows me to do some things, but I'm not going to do them. He's not going to do them, and he hasn't.
Right.
And what we've seen is, you know, 7.2 million people that are encountered at the southern border. We've seen 1.8 million gotaways that have gotten into the country.
That's insane.
And you know, this fiscal year alone, there's almost 25,000 Chinese communist men that have come into the country, as well as 18, 19,000 known gang members and criminals that have been encountered and stopped. And it's all because President Biden chose not to implement the laws of the land.
Yep.
So just last Saturday was the 1 year anniversary of the House passing laws that say, okay, President Biden, you can choose to do some certain things, but this law that we want to have happen will force you to do these things.
HR2
is a great bill that the House passed a year ago, and the Democrats in the Senate, Senator Schumer, has not bothered to bring it up at all. In fact, they've not brought any bill up in the Democrat-controlled Senate.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about a bill that they tried to cobble together, and they're trying to blame Republicans, but
right.
the Democrats never brought it forth in the Senate.
Yeah, you guys have already done your job on this one.
We really have. And not only did we pass HR2 a year ago, but we've also passed some partial provisions of some things, and the Senate's never bothered to pick those up as well. And it's unfortunate because in the last year since HR2 was passed, there have been over 17,000 pounds of fentanyl that have come into the country, been over 2 million people that have been encountered by the Border Patrol that have come across the country, and 300,000 known gotaways. I mean, these are people that are seen on cameras or that were chased by the Border Patrol but actually got into the country. And it's all because of President Biden's failed policies. And it's going to be an impact. I mean, Americans are seeing the crime. They're seeing the people dying from fentanyl overdose. I mean, there's almost 300 people a day dying from overdose from fentanyl. I mean, that's roughly the size of a large commercial airplane.
That hurts.
And if a plane crashed every day, President would do something about it. So he should do something about this to help protect Americans.
Yeah, you would think so. That's why we got just about a minute or so left here, Congressman. But you mentioned China. You mentioned the fentanyl. They've essentially openly admitted that this is some type of chemical warfare against the United States, that they're willingly allowing this fentanyl to come into the country. What else can we do to try and stifle China a little bit from coming into the country, from putting this warfare onto us, causing this anarchy, and actually putting up our defenses against this nation?
Well, I mean, the president has a lot of tools at his advantage, and he doesn't use them. I mean, President Biden doesn't use them. President Trump used them, was successful at it, whether it's putting tariffs on Chinese products, whether it's actually negotiating and requiring agreements. You know, right now what we're seeing is China's sending the supplies and the components of fentanyl into Mexico, and the cartels there are combining it and sending it across the border. So they're really complicit in terms of this poisoning that they're doing to
America. They're totally okay with it.
And we need to hold Mexico accountable to help protect the border, just like President Trump did. We need to make sure that the Remain in Mexico policy works, that we use parole on a limited basis the way it was designed, and that we actually protect America's borders, just like there's issues around the world with countries' borders. We should be protecting America as well.
Yeah, amen to that. 30 seconds left here real quick, but I know it's early in the election season, but are you optimistic? Could we see a Republican majority in the House, the Senate, and a presidency in November?
I really think so, that we should have, President Trump should win the presidency.
He's doing well right now.
Yeah, he certainly is. Because people can compare President Trump's Biden policies to President Biden's policies and see how what worked during the President Trump's administration, what's been big failures during the Biden administration. And, you know, the Senate, it's a recognition there that the Republicans should pick that up, because the Democrat Senate's done very little. And on the House side, I mean, we've pushed so many good policies through that I believe there'll be a Republican majority in the House and the Senate, and that Republicans will control the White House.
I'm optimistic. We got a lot of work to do, and hopefully we can make that happen coming up in the next session. It's Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District right here in the state of Kansas. Congressman, always great to talk to you, my friend. Such a great friend. We appreciate it. Keep up the fight. We'll do it again soon.
Well, great. Thank you, Andy.
Right back here on The Voice of Reason. Stay here.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. So great to have you with us for a Monday, 24 minutes past the hour, radio, TV, live streaming, and podcasting, however you watch or listen to us. We always love you and appreciate it. Thanks again to Congressman Ron Estes coming on the program, from my congressman right here in the 4th District for the state of Kansas. And now heading up the Tax Initiative Group in Washington, D.C. Maybe, just maybe, we can see some tax cuts. Can you imagine, if you will, and we played the audio, what was it, last week, I think, when Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House spokesperson, came out and said, yeah, we're going to go ahead and end the Trump tax cuts. We're going to end those tax plans. Well, doesn't that mean that taxes are going up? Because if the tax plan is ending, that means what was a cut is now going to go back to a higher rate, which means that would be a tax increase. No, we're going to make sure that no one gets a tax increase. But you're ending a tax cut. Yeah, we're ending a tax cut. So they're going to go up. No, they're not. They're going to stay the same. We're going to keep the same rate. We're just not going to let them end. I'm very confused. Makes my brain hurt, but that's the way that progressives like to operate just a little bit. All right, let's get into the latest and what's trending here, shall we?
What's trending today?
First and foremost, I don't know if you saw over the weekend, and we actually, this is why, again, the beauty of having a weekend syndicated program, because there are only two national political talk shows nationwide, and I am one of those right here on the Voice of Reason, and everything always seems to happen right at the time that we're on the air on Saturday afternoon, and other affiliate radio stations play it at different times, Saturday nights or on Sundays, doesn't really matter, it's okay, we keep it generic enough, but all the news always seems to happen right as we're on the air, including over the weekend, this massive Trump rally in New Jersey. Andy, what's that matter? Well, okay, Donald Trump always gets big rallies. I mean, we already know that. He pulls in, no matter where he goes, 20, 30,000 people. He has to go to these major coliseums or these major venues in order to host these rallies because they're so large. But the significance of this one's slightly different. This was an East Coast rally that's predominantly a very blue area. New Jersey, especially in Wildwood, New Jersey, which is especially even more blue than normal. Well, Andy, they've had Republican places. Yeah, true. Okay, they've had Republicans. And by Republicans, I use the air quotes here. Republicans that were in control there were like Chris Christie Republicans, where they're not the most conservative individuals. They're very middle-of-the-road, wishy-washy Republicans, if there are at all. And that's been a while since Republicans have actually had a dominance in politics in the state of New Jersey and that surrounding area. These are predominantly some very blue districts. And the numbers are still astonishing at pulling in between 80 to 100,000 individuals. At the time of the rally, they were saying 80,000. By today, I guess the trickling in numbers afterwards, they pulled in almost 100,000 individuals to this rally in New Jersey. Now, this is at a time, again, where Donald Trump cannot campaign a whole lot. This is at a time when Joe Biden surprisingly is on the campaign trail a lot more than what he was in 2019 and 2020. At a time when Joe Biden continues to lose numbers and Donald Trump is in the media nonstop day in and day out for his ridiculous court case where they say that he's, you know, paid this hush money and that he's doing all this corrupt garbage, which is falling apart before their eyes. And they continue to rail on him. And you would think, again, what's the definition of insanity? Doing something over and over and expecting a different result, right? The definition of insanity, you would think, would cross the minds of these people and be like, wow, we've tried to go after him legally. We've tried to go after him financially. We've tried to go after him constitutionally. None of it's worked. Maybe we should stop this and do a different tactic. But instead, they continue to talk about Russian collusion, which is laughable with how stupid that one is, with the impeachments that he had, which was laughable because of the fake dossier from the Hillary Clinton campaign back in 2016. And then, of course, now with him doing this hush money, when even the latest polls from Democrats show that if he gets convicted with this hush money case, that his poll numbers actually will go up and he'll get more support. That's backfiring on them. And we're seeing that with the numbers in a blue area like New Jersey, pulling in almost 100,000 people. That's insane. The significance of this is huge, if you know what I mean.
And I think we're going to make it bigly.
So we'll see as the election season continues on, but Joe Biden continues to lose steam. The elites, the Hollywood elites, Barack Obama continues to go into panic mode, and it's kind of fun to watch. Will that trickle down? The big question is, will it trickle down into the statewide races across the nation?
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Reason meets radio. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. By the way, we have Aria Lightstone that'll be joining the program here over the next few days. We may do that for our syndicated national show on the weekend. He is one of them that worked under the Trump administration on the Abraham Accords. He lives in Israel right now, and he's been Given some updates, I reached out to him again because it's been a while since we've talked with him. And obviously with the ongoing concerns with Israel and the Middle East, that we want to get an update from him. So he'll be joining the program, I want to say, later this week or this weekend. But definitely some interesting things going on there. And we'll get Aria on the program with Joe Biden possibly withholding resources for Israel with the ongoing conflict, because how dare that they go into Rafah and take out a terrorist organization that wants to see the decimation of Israel. How dare. Which, by the way, did you see over the weekend, obviously it's now commencement ceremony time for all the colleges across the nation, and there were multiple videos of obviously the rabble-rousers at different colleges while they were doing the commencement ceremony, some of them even canceling or delaying them. There was one video, which I don't know. Again, this is the mindset, the self-centered narcissism mindset of these college students, where one student they walked up on stage, they got their diploma, then they shredded the diploma on stage. They were walking up there and then just ripped it up. Now, I don't know how that fights oppression of Israeli organizations or the Israeli government partnering with universities in the U.S. I don't know how that stops the oppression of the Palestinians or something with Free Palestine, with their movement. I don't know how spending your taxpayer or spending your student loan debt, maybe mommy and daddy paid for the college, I don't know. But if you have college debt and getting a degree and then getting your diploma from a prestigious university like Columbia University, where I think this happened, and then getting your degree and you rip up your diploma because you graduated college, I don't know how that hurts anybody but you. I'm very confused on that.
I'm special!
I know, but that's what we get from the rhetoric going on the Tweety and on the social media across the country right now, with the rhetoric that we're being spread about how evil Israel is, how evil the U.S. is, and how it's all about Free Palestine, which leads us into our next conversation.
What's trending today?
About the content that we're seeing now versus the content that we may or may not see relatively soon on the interweb, as the FCC, if you're not aware, has recently passed in a 3-2 decision on party lines to re-implement net neutrality. Now, for those that don't remember, I know, I get it, it's been a long time, but net neutrality was a policy that was implemented under the Obama administration during his reign, while they wanted to make sure that the interweb was free. They wanted to make sure that the control of content or that the services by internet providers was free and expanded and that it protects everybody. When, as you know, under a Democrat policy like that, it actually does the opposite. So what do we get to look forward to moving forward? Happy to talk about that and more. He is with American Commitment. We love having him on the show, and it's been a while since we've had him back on here. The president of American Commitment, Mr. Phil Kirpin. Phil, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Andy. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. It's always great to chat with you, and happy Monday. Any surprise here that we saw the FCC re-vote to re-implement net neutrality for the country again?
Well, it's only a little bit surprising in that, this is like one of the great hoaxes of all time, in that we had all these very specific predictions from liberal politicians and the media, and they were so wildly wrong that I thought they might be embarrassed to do this again and pretend they're not wildly wrong, but they were not. So I guess in that respect, it was mildly surprising, but probably shouldn't have been. In case you or any of your listeners forgot, about 7 years ago now, when the Trump FCC repealed the Obama internet regulations, public utility regulations of the internet under the misapplied term net neutrality, misapplied in my judgment, they said that the internet would stop working, that you would be charged for every tweet, every Facebook post you would have to pay for, it would slow down so badly that things would load one dot 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 word dot 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 at dot 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 time. They said there would be literal mass deaths, Andy. I don't know if you remember this one, but there was actually one article that said because deregulation will break the internet, people will not be able to access suicide prevention resources, and they will all kill themselves. Wow. I'm not making this up. This was an actual prediction that was made. And so we have this remarkable circumstance where you had a very high-profile deregulation, and you had very specific, sort of huge predictions about what would happen. Every single one of them was wrong. Not one single negative consequence of any kind happened. In fact, what did happen was prices went down pretty sharply. about 25%. In fact, they went down so sharply that Janet Yellen, who was then the Fed chair, said there was a, quote, idiosyncratic event in the telecommunications sector that caused the price level economy-wide to drop, which is pretty remarkable. You have a deregulation that's so successful that it affects the overall price level of the economy.
Wow.
And so we were paying less, and we got more, a lot more. Speeds went up about 500% for wired internet services and about 800% for wireless. We had the whole 5G rollout. So they said it would be the end of the world. It was not. Nothing they predicted would happen did. And in fact, what did happen is everything you could ever want from a deregulation. We got much faster speeds. We got much lower prices. And as soon as they had three Democrats on the FCC, they voted to reverse it. So it, I think this is like a pretty interesting lesson in sort of the triumph of left-wing pro-regulation ideology over the experience in front of our eyes and their shamelessness. So you tell me if any of that is surprising. I find it mildly surprising in that, they were so wrong. But maybe I should never be surprised. There's no deregulation they're ever going to like, no matter how successful it is.
Yeah, well, that is true. Yeah, anytime we deregulate something, it's going to be the end of the world, which is what they love to campaign on. It made me sad when we heard that Ajit Pai, actually coming from my home state here in Kansas, when he was the head of the FCC under the Trump administration, when they repealed that, when he announced that he was not going to stay on when Biden got elected, it made me sad because we were concerned that something like this could happen again, and obviously it did with the partisan lines now. So exactly what does net neutrality do, and why did we see when we repealed it, why did we see the prices go down and speed actually go up? Why did we allow innovation to happen? What exactly does net neutrality do now that they want to re-implement this again?
Well, the term net neutrality originally, what it was supposed to mean was that you could access any lawful content of your choice. And nobody really objected to that. I mean, it's pretty much been kind of the bipartisan consensus for a couple of decades that on your internet service you ought to be able to access any lawful content of your choice. But what the left likes to do is they redefine words. So they redefine a popular term to be something else that they want that's quite different. And in this, they said, well, you know, what we really need for net neutrality is to reclassify internet service as a regulated monopoly service using 1930s-era Telecommunications Act that was designed for the Ma Bell system. And we'll pretend that it's a monopoly and it has to be regulated by the FCC, who then will have the power to basically decide rates, decide what kind of services can be offered, decide what kind of commercial terms can be offered, decide the terms on which interconnection occurs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they basically said is we're going to be the bosses, we're going to be in charge of every aspect of internet service. And the problem with that is if you're trying to justify, you know, a $5 billion or a $10 billion build-out of a network, you've got to have the predictability that you're going to be able to offer the services you want to offer at a price that makes sense so you can earn back your money in a return on investment. And even though the FCC said when they put this in, like, we're going to give ourselves all this power, but we're probably not going to use it. I mean, this is what they said. But, you know, you could say that, but is there any confidence that you won't use it in some way that's destructive to getting return on investment? So we had a big decline in the rate of increase of investment. The slope came down considerably on investment in the sector. So we had less building going on. We had less investment. We had less. And we sort of had a stall out in the quality of services. And, of course, when we deregulated, we saw the opposite. We saw sort of everything take off in terms of investment and competition, and speeds went through the roof, as I mentioned, and prices came down. Wireless became increasingly competitive as a home alternative. And yet, T-Mobile's put huge pressure on the cable company with their home, you know, 5G home service, which, you know, I've never used it myself, but it's apparently good enough that a lot of people have switched from cable. So cable freaked out, and what did? They cut their prices. They upgraded their networks. They're offering more speeds at a lower price than before. And so competition has worked extraordinarily well. Yeah. Their vision, though, is the bureaucrats will be in charge, the regulators, the FCC people will be in charge of how much can be offered and so forth. And you know, when you have that approach, I'm not going to say you get no investment. Obviously, you still had some the years that was in, but you get relatively less. And so that's been the story. When you have regulations on, you get less investment, you get less competition, you get prices come down, but not as much, and speeds go up, but not as much. So I'm not you know, one of the problems the left has is that they lie about everything to make it more dramatic. So they say, oh, this is going to be the end of the world. Everything's going to go. And then they look dumb when it doesn't happen. So I'm not going to tell you regulation is going to cause, you know, mass suicide or any of the nonsense that they do. But we all know when you regulate something that you pay more and you get less. And that's what's going to happen again, unfortunately, unless this gets
Well, it's going to slow the process down, especially. And now that we see this push that Democrats have been doing, especially across the nation, saying that it is this utility, we have the Biden administration, and even here in Kansas, obviously in rural country, you know, it's pushed for this rural broadband, trying to get more access to broadband internet to rural communities all over the country. That if we go back to this net neutrality, it's already being subsidized enough by the federal government. Now we're going to throw in this net neutrality and all this government regulation and money, and it could slow down that process even more, which is kind of crazy. We're out of time, my friend. I could talk about this a lot longer, but it's the FCC's net neutrality issue that I think it's going to be, hopefully we can see reversed again when we get some Republicans back in office here in about a year. It's Phil Kirpin with American Commitment.
But Andy, will they predict mass death again when Trump repeals it again? That's what I want to say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's going to be the fear tactics of how we're all going to die again when we actually reverse it under Trump. Again, it's AmericanCommitment.org. Go and check them out online. Phil, it's always good to talk to you, my friend. Happy Monday. Let's do it again soon.
Have a good one.
Hey, appreciate it very much. Here it is. Phil Kirpin. Always love chatting with him. Great content. We'll do some more of that. Break it down when we come back. One more segment around the corner here on Voice Reason for a Monday.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it. Happy Monday for you as we wrap up here. Boy, the show flew on by. My mind's swirling, and hopefully you have broken your brain just a little bit too with all our great guests, Congressman Ron Estes from the 4th District of Kansas, and Phil Kirpin, American Commitment, AmericanCommitment.org. Great organization, a great think tank in D.C. fighting the good fight up there. Net neutrality, man, how insane is that? It failed. They implemented it. It didn't work. And then when even the progressives admit when they got rid of it and they're using all their fear tactic and scaring everybody and everybody, oh, look at that. We're deregulating. How dare you deregulate something? And we're all going to die because you deregulated.
We're all going to die because of you.
So what we get told each and every time. And yet the prices went down and connectivity went up and speed went up. And remember, the federal government here, it may be triggering for some on the other side. The government isn't the answer to the problems. I know. Very wild. For example, I doubt that we would have as many crazy, wild, radical college protesters right now if we didn't have censorship on certain content on the interweb that's doing what they're doing right now with the Free Palestine garbage, which I did have to have a fun few conversations over the weekend with some people on social media about that, because they, again, just feel like they are the absolute experts on this issue. And therefore, they're going to make their voice heard. And how dare that there's a genocide going on Palestinians, which is not the case at all in any way, shape, or form. But yet they continue to show that, which is why you see people ripping up their diplomas and continuously trying to disrupt the commencement ceremonies at colleges and universities across the nation, with some students at, what was this? This was Columbia University, with students talking about how devastating it's been to watch what's happening on their campus.
Here's the thing about commencement. This movement that has been on campus has been advocating to, quote, shut it down and to cancel joy. And by canceling commencement, it seems that the university has caved to both of those demands and basically allowed the mob to win. And to me, that's really sad. And my heart goes out to the seniors.
These protests are completely targeted at Jews. When they chant and call about Zionists, they mean Jew. They use it as a sanitized slur for the word Jew. And I think it's ridiculous because not only is it incredibly anti-Semitic, but it also wouldn't be tolerated if this were the kind of rhetoric spewed at any other minority group, as it absolutely should not be tolerated. But because it's the Jewish community, it depends on the context, right? So many Jewish students, myself included, have been made to feel incredibly unsafe. Many of us have been harassed, stalked, even assaulted on our own campus and off of it. And I mean, I think that's one thing that a lot of the media tends to get wrong. They say that violence is restricted to off campus, but my friends have been physically assaulted on campus. on the campus where they live, where they learn, where they've studied.
What a crazy time. So that audio, by the way, from Fox News with some of the interviews of these students, as this is the rhetoric now. And just like they had mentioned, there's a different trigger word, if you want to put it that way, for the progressives now. It's not against the Jews. It's against the Zionists. The Zionists. That is the new key word now, what they're going after, which is essentially any Jew that they deem is Jewish and that they don't like. So now it's against the Zionists. But if you've noticed, they've changed the lingo so that way it's very descriptive to what they want, but it's a broader definition of what they're actually going after. If you use the Zionist word, that means a Jew. If you use the term fascist, that means Donald Trump. If you use the term Nazi or domestic terrorist, then that obviously means a Republican that owns firearms and buys Bibles online, because that's what they're going after now. So they've broadened these terms to be specific for what they want by manipulating the terminology in today's times. Now, tie that into net neutrality, which is the government regulating the expansion of the internet, which is the government regulating the amount of interweb for 3G, 4G, 5G service that you get on your phone, and the service that you get for the internet itself, the rural content control, the rural broadband expansion. Tie that into these issues now, and then throw in the nice little dash of artificial intelligence. And what do you get? You get a redefining of every term out there to fit the narrative for the progressive agenda. You get a content control and silencing and censorship of certain content that they don't want out there, aka the truth or real information. So that way, when you Google search something, you only get certain content that they want you to get that's based on these trigger words of fascist and Nazi and Hitler and Zionist and all these other terms they like to use, domestic terrorist and radical right winger, fringe right winger, hard right winger, whatever they like to use here. And then we only get that content on the internet based on the regulation of this stuff. And if you deregulate it, that's when you get like what you get with Twitter, which is the wild, wild west. And you get hate speech and you get Nazism that's spreading rampant, blaming us for anti-Israeli and anti-Semitic remarks, when that's literally what they're protesting on college campuses right now, is Semitism and Jews being there in the first place. What a wild world we live in. Crazy. We'll back at it again on Tuesday. Until then, be your own voice of reason. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.